And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, 3 comic reviews, 2 seasons of a fan favorite at Netflix, and 1 Punch Man adds up to an entertaining show for you. From around the world of pop culture, you add up the entertainment, then you multiply by the awesome crew, and the final product is the kind of fun that anyone can co-sign. Grab your graphing calculators, because the Major Spoilers podcast puts the squares at the root of it all. And it's on the air.
Welcome to issue 972 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Scott Johnson is back. Hey, Scott.
Hey, it's nice to be back. How are you guys?
It is so good to hear your voice. I mean, I get to hear your voice at least once a week.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I love coming on here because it's my, I have a lot of comic friends, but this is the place where I get to really talk about it. So
well, we are super glad to have you here. Yes, we are the super nerds. And we're going to bring you some super news. After 2 seasons of the Lock and Key Kids of them fighting evil in the Key House, the Lock and Key TV series on Netflix has announced the series is coming to an end with season 3. Carlton Cuse and Meredith Averill, who are the showrunners and the executive producers, said, "Once we began working on the series, we felt 3 seasons was an ideal length to bring the story of the Lock family and their Key House adventures to a satisfying conclusion. As storytellers, we are grateful we had the opportunity to tell our version of Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez's incredible story exactly the way we wanted. We're keeping the magical keys, though, for our own personal use. The final season of the show should land on Netflix in the last half of this year. If not in October, November range, my guess is it's going to happen in the early half of 2023, like January, February. So.
Yeah. And I mean, 3 years is about the length of time you can get out of a cast of actual teenagers.
Well, and you know, there's a couple of,
the little boy Bodhi was like 11 when they started. And I think now he's 26.
Yeah. They've had some delays obviously with COVID and other stuff. Ashley Victoria Robinson actually, wrote up on this week's, Did You Hear About This? And she makes a valid point that most shows go about 3 seasons because after 3 seasons, it's time for contract negotiations. And if the shows are doing really well, it means everybody's shelling out more money. And I want to say one of the girls in the show or one of the actresses in the show is in that movie Coda. And that means big money. So maybe let's just cancel this so we don't have to pay out a bunch more money.
Okay. Admission time. I loved the comic. In fact, you're the one that introduced me to it a year ago. And I was like super into it. Loved every second of it. And when I heard about the show, I was like, oh, no way. I've not seen a single episode, partly because everyone I talk to, you included, tell me that it's not the same story. It's a different story.
Yeah, it's same but different. And here's the thing. And I said this on the morning stream this week on Monday when I show up on Scott and Brian's wonderful show that you guys can go check out on the Frog Pants Network. I think they made too many changes to it to where it didn't feel like a comic book adaptation.
Yeah.
I'm going to clarify that. I want to clarify that now because it's going to cut this exact same issue is going to come up again later in the show. My biggest problem with the Lock and Key TV series is they took an hard R rated comic and they turned it into a very soft PG-13 TV series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They introduced new characters and new keys, and they drastically changed a couple of storylines that really didn't, in my mind, didn't jive with the comic book. So that was the first season I thought was fine, but I started the second season. I was halfway through the first episode, and I was just like, you know, I don't really care anymore.
Mm.
Yeah. And kind of turned it off. So
the thing that really struck me through season one is that Lock and Key is a really an esoteric comic book series. And it does things that are absolutely unique and weird and crazy for comic books. But it feels like some of the changes that were made on the television side were made to echo the traditional expectation of quote unquote, a comic book story, mm-hmm. which actually blunted the parts of the story that I like the best.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I love the actress playing Dodge, they took all the fangs out of that character in season one.
I was worried about it. It sounds like maybe I made the right decision.
You're not missing anything.
And Joe Hilly and had a serial killer bent to it. And I was into that whole, I was really into that comic. And
had they kept the fact that this is a Joe Hill, son of Stephen King vibe throughout the thing, I think they probably would have been better at it. But again, they took a hard R and turned it into a soft PG-13. And that just, it as Matthew said, lost some of its bite. So there you go.
Yep.
One more season, boys and girls, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. Matthew, what else is brewing on the streaming networks?
Brew, ha, 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 ha. You can actually, once the Lock and Key is done, theoretically, even with all of the shakeups going on at WB and the Discovery Networks and the Warner Brothers, HBO Max is still working on an Aqualad series, which is apparently based on the graphic novel You Brought Me the Ocean. And that, of course, is going to be a one-hour, this frightens me, dramedy following Jackson Hyde, the newest Aqualad. He's a gay teenager living in New Mexico. His attraction to the water, even though he lives in the desert, and how he realizes, hey, the ocean may be something kind of cool. And then, of course, he discovers superpowers, including aquakinesis, which is a great power, and falling in love and doing all the thing and all of the stuff. And then there's nobody attached so far as writers go. But Charlize Theron is one of the executive producers of this theoretical Aqualad series.
I think when you have Charlize Theron who wants to push it forward, I think that you're going to see a lot of people excited about this. And so it'll probably get a green light, especially with the fact that on HBO Max, you had Peacemaker, which was a fantastic show. You have Young Justice, which is just this season. Young Justice Phantoms has just gone into some very different directions I wasn't expecting. If you're worried that the
happy about those directions
so Aqualad in, or he's Aquaman in, this season of Young Justice, he is gay. He's openly gay. And he has I don't know if they're married or just dating, but they deal a lot. When you go into Atlantis, they deal a lot with, very open relationships. You have polyamorous, relationships, you have, interspecies relationships. You know, there's one guy that's a merman guy and another person who's more human, kind of stuff. So I'm totally fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. There is a really weird religious bent, this year in the show that I'm not super keen on. And it feels like they're pushing a religious agenda, even though they're not, pushing one particular agenda. So there's this whole thing with, Zatara, and he's pushing, you know, how his Catholic faith is very important to him and all of these things. And then you've got, there's another character who is wanting to know about, being a Muslim. And so there's a whole like 10 minutes of the show just devoted to what is Muslim? What is it to be a Muslim? And then, there's another religion. There's a couple of other religions that they kind of push hard in the show that I'm just like, wow, that's really weird that they're just pushing all these religions in the show. And so that always takes me out of it, for various reasons, but, it's a pretty good season, especially when they're doing this thing with the Phantom school bus is really a neat thread that ties through the whole series. So if you haven't checked it out, Scott, definitely go check it out.
Justice up to this point, I watched all of it, but I haven't seen any of this new stuff. So
yeah, it's going to jump you forward many, many years, and there's going to be stuff like, oh, this happened and this happened. I don't remember seeing anything like that. Yeah, that's kind of the point. They jump you ahead and just say, hey, remember when so-and-so joined the team or left the team or whatever? And it's just like you're just expected to just drop right in and know what's going on, which kind of keeps you on your toes a little bit. So,
well, back to this live action thing. If Charlize Theron, aka Furiosa, is in charge, I think we all let her do what she wants. Make it
yep.
up.
Yep.
Very exciting. You want to hear about, how about ghosts? Okay. How do you feel about ghosts? You
like ghosts? Yeah, sure. Spooky.
A new live action Casper, the friendly ghost, is in development. Peacock. Man. Yep, that's right. Now you can get Peacock regular or Peacock Plus. I call regular Freecock. Anyway, moving on. According to Variety, the series is described as a horror slash adventure show that reimagines Casper in a coming of age story that explores what it means to be alive. Casper finds himself entangled in a mystery, uncovering dark secrets that have been buried in the small town of Eternal Fall for over 100 years.
I don't know how to feel about this.
I can't wait for the Sabrina crossover.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it either. I'm actually a little bit torn because Casper's fine, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Casper has ever really had a lot of like heavy duty continuity or backstory or so. I mean, conceptually saying, hey, this is Casper and this is a story of a ghost who now has to figure out the afterlife, blah. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of fine with that, but I'm also worried because when you say Casper, I think Goofy Harvey comics fun. Oh. And even that movie was, you know, goofy kid fun, even with the, you know, the fart jokes and things. And I feel like this is going to be like PG-13 craziness. And I feel like it's just,
they're going to turn Casper into Riverdale.
River Casper.
I heard today Riverdale's doing time travel next season. And I can't do that.
Oh man. If they're doing Jughead's Time Police. Oh, that'd be awesome if they did that. I don't know, but there was a whole thing in Archie Comics called Jughead's Time Police, where Jughead is a time traveler.
I know they did the Black Hood, which is one of the old school MLJ superhero characters, and they actually did a story where Archie was murdered, and they spent like six episodes dealing with it, and they're like, oh. Alternate universe.
And did they do a Sabrina crossover?
Yes, in the middle of that Rivervale crossover.
But didn't bring in Kieran Shipka, did they, or did they?
Yeah.
Oh, they did.
Kieran Shipka came in and she played Sabrina.
Oh, well, now I may have to go track that down. Now, there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, literally, the actor who plays Jughead was like, yeah, we're pretty much done with this mess. We're still all under contract. Just let us go.
I don't know. It's... still gets big ratings.
Oh, no, it's got lots of people watching that thing. I was like considering, Kim's like, we should watch that show again because we fell off. And I said, oh, that sounds all right. And then somebody literally says, oh, they're totally doing time travel next season. And then I went, I don't know if I want to watch that. I already kind of hate it. Like,
I mean,
it's just not my thing. And I don't know if time travel will help me make it my thing.
They did. They do a lot of references to the original Archie stuff. Like one of the Halloweens, they dressed up as the super Archie characters.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
I think it's just because it's so, I know that's the point, but it's such drama for drama's sake. And well, not,
it is. Yeah.
I know. I mean, Archie,
when you do a sequence where Betty Cooper is secretly into S&M and has a split personality, that's a giant whip cracking sex kitten. I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
I know, that's Betty Cooper,
out of character for the books. I just don't.
But that's the thing, right? So Archie Comics is supposed to be, you know, fun kid humor stuff. And that's fine. Yeah. But if you're going to try to create something that is fun for teenagers, which is really CW's primary demographic, you can't do a Full House. You can't do Archie meets Urkel. You can't do Family Matters and expect that to be a success. You've got to make it a little bit more hip than what they're getting. Now, they're not going full on Euphoria in the show. But, you know, apparently I hear not only are the adults fond of Euphoria, but so are the teenagers. So it sounds like the CW kind of hit on a sweet spot for that show.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they were happy with it. They also wouldn't be doing as well as it's doing. The ratings really good. I don't know what would get me back in, but maybe something.
Time travel, Jughead's Time Police.
Maybe, or maybe I just need to see Casper and go, oh,
yeah, that's going to be on a different network. So yeah. We don't talk about Bruno there, Scott.
I mean, we got
the Riverdale again after I made this.
We got a telepathic Jughead and
is he telepathic?
Invulnerable, yeah, telepathic Jughead, invulnerable Archie, and like Betty's doing some weird psychic Bambi thing where she can read your aura. But nice. I mean.
All right, dear listeners, should Scott watch Riverdale or not? Head over to our Discord server where you can talk about these stories and a whole lot more. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server absolutely free. There is a link in the show notes. Just click on that. It'll open up your Discord account and you'll be greeted with millions upon millions of happy cat gifts. And then you can access the Major Spoilers chat and let us know what you think about these stories and a whole lot more. Or if you would like to connect your Patreon account to your Discord server, you will unlock hidden channels exclusive to our patrons. You can find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right, we are into the review section of the show this week. And let's see. Scott, why don't you tell us about Clear? It's a comic that was out digitally from Comixology a while ago, but it may now just be showing up in print. That's the way the Comixology originals work. They have them in digital, and then they Dark Horse, I think, is collecting them and putting them out in single issues, like 6 months later. So
yeah, I believe that is correct. And you know, if you go to Amazon, you can get, I think it's $3.99. Just buy the thing.
Oh, if you've got it, I see it's free with your Prime membership.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I just noticed that. I guess I can get that hardbound, at least the first issue. I don't know if the others are in here. But, well, anyway, the comic is called Clear. It is written by Scott Snyder, known mostly for his work over at DC on Batman and other projects. The artist here is Francis Manapul, I believe is how you say his name. He's doing both art and color here. And it's great. I didn't have any expectation going in other than I generally like Scott Snyder's writing. For the most part, I really like his work with Batman and his Capullo years and all that. I guess they still do stuff together, including another Comixology original. But anyway, this thing kind of blew me away. It's a sci-fi mystery thriller type thing. It's set in a dystopian futuristic world. I would say, you know, Blade Runner-esque for those wondering if that's what we're talking about. And the conceit here is that, and they set it up really well, but the conceit here is that in the future, internet technology has led to something called veils, and there's a lot of connective tissue between now and then. But the idea is these veils are things that people make part of their brains, and you get to see in the world whatever you want the world to be. So if you decide that you want the world to look like a big lush forest, that's what it looks like to you. If you want everything in front of you to look like a horrible hellscape full of zombies and vampires, it can be that for you. And everything in between. Just imagine any kind of motif you want, you can make it happen with these veils. And there's a whole underground of black market veils. In fact, they call them black veils, which sounds a lot like blackmails, which there's, you know, there's a play on words there, but also there's kind of a play on a story on that as well. But anyway, there's this, you know, international trade of these things. They're very dangerous. Some of them are, you know, the way the comic puts them out, it's a bit like, RoboCop 2 had that fake drug called Nuke. You know what I mean? What was the turn of the century Catherine Bigelow movie? Strange Days. They had the little plug into your head or whatever. It's a little like that. These are little microchips, and they have these different veils in them. And it's because it's become so ubiquitous, and everybody everywhere has got veils. It represents 70% or something of the entire United States economy. And there's wars in the South. There's wars in the East of the U.S. The U.S. is a total mess. The rest of the world doing better than we are. And they go into some of why that happened. There was a big war with China as part of the backstory. Anyway, it's all very noir. And the guy you follow is this character, Sam. Oh, I already forgot his name. How could I forget? Sam Dunes, like plural Dune, but Dunes. And Sam is basically like a PI. So it's very kind of, Dame walked into my office that night. They're kind of going for that vibe. A little bit more, you know, they're taking it a little more seriously. They're not just being parody of that, but he's constantly running down these deals. Like, why is this corner such a hot spot for illegal veils, and who's selling them and why? And one of these deals goes really wrong and he gets involved with just the right/wrong people. And that's where things really kick off. And I've almost done with the second issue. Or no, I finished the second issue. I got third issue. I just started. And I really like it. If any of those themes sound like they're your jam, anyone listening to this, you should check it out, especially if you have Comixology. There's no reason not to check it out. And I went from like, oh, I'll check it and see what's up, to I'm going to read this whole freaking thing. And I hope there's more, because it's just right out of my playbook as far as stuff I like and things I like to read. So highly, highly recommended thus far. I mean, maybe it peters out and doesn't stick a landing. I don't know, cause I'm not that far, but clear, on Comixology. Very, very, very cool.
Ah, nice. Very, very cool indeed. A couple of weeks ago, Matthew and I reviewed, a Mike Mignola piece that came out during COVID, or that he created during COVID, spinning out of his, sketchbook collection, Radio Spaceman. And now the new issue, Radio Spaceman number 2, is out this week from Dark Horse Comics, Matthew.
Radio Spaceman part 2 of 2, Mission to Numa 4, which 2 times 4 is 8, keeping with this week's math theme. Written by Mike Mignola. The art is actually by Greg Hinkle. No relation to Professor Hinkle, who animated Frosty the Snowman back in 72. But this issue picks up where last issue left off, with Radio Spaceman about to be killed by frog people on planet Numa 4, while one of the people that he came to save, a scientist, is somehow being manipulated, mind-controlled, somehow being turned crazy, evil, wackety-wackety, by a giant monster named Gargoom. Gargoom. Which is, I think, 80% of the word balloons in this issue. But in a good way. Radio Spaceman, you may remember, is literally a radio-controlled pseudo-android with a human skull. It's a gorgeous visual. But he is actually controlled via radio waves from Earth by a very, very old man. So we start with the old man plugging himself into the equipment and then Radio Spaceman having his adventure. After the damsel, she doesn't really fit the damsel role, but after the character being menaced is saved, we find out what Gargoom is. And then we find out that Gargoom is not the only monster on this planet, and that this planet has a particular prophecy. There were 3 monsters once, and that was 1 too many. And so if Gargoom is ever freed, bad things happen. I will not reveal those bad things. Just suffice to say they are bad and they are terrible. And at the point where it seems like once again, Professor Aja is going to be a damsel in distress, the villain is like, I will control your brain. Take my hand. Come to me. And her response is, yawn. And then we find out her secret. And I'm not going to tell you that either. But I am super excited at the end of this issue. And I remember saying when Steven and I reviewed issue 1, I kind of hope that when I get to the end of issue 2, I'm going to say this should have been 164-page issue. It should have been a one-shot or, you know, an album in the old school Tintin style, something, because I really felt like they were setting up a lot of cool things that didn't start to move last issue. And this issue comes out shooting, and it's just pretty much all action from top to bottom. And the last panel gives me hope that we may see more of Radio Spaceman. We may see more of Dr. AZ. We may actually have some ongoing possibilities in this particular corner of Mignola's universe. Yeah. And I'm excited about that. And I like the fact that I came back to revisit this book thinking, oh, well, did I give it a fair shot last time? And the answer is, yes, I did. But also, this issue makes the whole package even better. So, 4 slices of meatloaf for Radio Spaceman number 2 from Dark Horse Comics. honestly, I'm not going to say wait for the trade because, you know, we don't do that. But if you do get a chance, you can actually purchase this issue. And I think also issue one, you can just hit the Amazon affiliate link at Major Spoilers, go buy both issues, read them together, and go, hey, you know, Matthew is right.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the first issue. Yeah, I really enjoyed the first issue and said everybody should go and buy it then. So it sounds like I am right. So here's the thing. There are links. There are links to every issue that we're talking about in the show notes. So if you want to just click on that, it'll take you right to the Amazon affiliate link. A little bit comes back our way. And when I mean a little bit, I'm like literally talking pennies per issue. So if you've got deep pockets and you want to go buy like 10,000 issues this month, man, I'd sure appreciate it. Taxes come due in next week, Scott.
Oh, I hate tax day. It's the worst.
I will just say that this year was a lot better for Major Spoilers than I thought. Too bad it was not a better year for my pocketbook.
Well, that's the thing, right? You never quite know what's going to happen. I will say I forgot to add my meatloaf score. I always forget about that. What's the high? What's the top out?
Five is the top.
All right, I'm going to give it 4.1 out of 5 meatloafs.
Okay. All right.
I'm going granular here. Yeah.
Okay. Just a little bit of extra. Yeah. What's the binding in your meatloaf, Scott? Oatmeal, breadcrumbs?
Oh gosh, cornflakes is what my mom did.
Cornflakes. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's kind of a weird thing, but we liked it.
No, I mean everybody's different. I know my grandmother was always like putting an oatmeal in ours, so.
Yeah, you got to look, if you're going to you got meat, you need to bind it. Yep. I say use what you got. That's fine.
Matthew, what did your grandmother use?
Oatmeal. Either oatmeal or soda crackers, depending on what was in the house.
Anybody ever use like stale bread, like bread you left out for a couple of days so it'd get hard?
That
I know. Okay. No, we didn't have stale bread. We had four children in the house. So.
I know just leading up to Thanksgiving, it was always like my mom would pull out a loaf of bread and just set it on the counter for like the week or whatever to get really nice and stale so she could make the stuffing out of it. So I know. I'm sorry. That's how I grew up. I know it's horrible. It's horrible, but there you go. Okay. My turn. This week from Image Comics and Steve Niles and Simon Kudransky, it's A Town Called Terror Number One. I don't know how to describe this series because so much of it is either 9 or 12 page panels, panels per page, or these really big double page spreads. So it reads very, very quickly. The art by Simon Kudransky is really good. I really enjoyed it. There are times where it's a little difficult to make out exactly what's going on. But the story starts out with two people getting it on. So if that's something that interests you, they do get it on. But then a bunch of people break into the house and kidnap this guy and shoot the wife in the neck with a trank dart and haul this guy away. They're taking him to apparently a town called Terror. I don't know what the name of the town is, but
Terror.
Apparently his father is the Henry West, our title character, main character, is ran away from his father a long time ago because his father is really, really not a nice guy. In fact, he may die and come back to life a lot. That may tell you a little bit about the nature of this town and the horror that awaits within. And so really it's Henry being brought back to this town in a spooky dimension and his wife waking up and there's no evidence that any kidnapping happened. The police don't believe her, anything like that. And that's really where the first issue ends. It's like I got to the end and I'll say that I was kind of disappointed that I didn't get more story in the first issue. Got a lot of pretty art, but the story was kind of just spun its wheels. I felt like I kind of wanted a little bit more from it. I think knowing Steve Niles, he did 30 Days of Night, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That is correct, right?
Yeah, I think so. So if you're a fan of the 30 Days of Night, then you kind of know that there's a slow burn happening in this thing. And I have a feeling that is what's going on here. And so I'm kind of digging on maybe waiting and seeing where this goes down the road. But the initial offering kind of left me kind of wanting more. And so I'm only going to give this 3.5 slices of my mom's stale bread meatloaf this week.
Your weird freaking meatloaf.
Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah.
Totally.
Well, whatever works. So there you go. A Town Called Terror. And if anybody wants any more reviews, of course, point your browser to majorspoilers.com, where we've got more reviews coming up every single day of the week. And a big thank you to Scott, not you, Scott Johnson, but to another Scott for becoming our newest patron at the yearly tier. Yes, we do have yearly tiers. At the yearly tier, you can pay for a full year, get a little discount, and enjoy all the cool stuff for an entire year. It's just like set it and forget it. So we could really use right now, you heard me talking about taxes. We could use a few more people to become patrons just like Scott. Perhaps it's you. You can find out more and keep the show going by pointing your browser to patreon.com/majorspoilers. We literally couldn't do this without you. And also you too, Scott Johnson. We couldn't do it without you being here this week.
Oh, thanks, man. I love being here. Look, I don't have enough nerds in my life post-pandemic.
Liar. Liar. That's
true. Look, not comic nerds, not nearly enough comic nerds, or even nerds that are willing to tell me why, you know, which seasons of some old 90s crappy action TV show I should watch. I didn't want to say the name because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But look.
Oh, you should definitely watch Friday the 13th, the movie. And then the TV series, episodes 1 through 7, and skip 8.
What was the one where they had to go hunt down the haunted artifacts?
Yeah, that was Friday the
13th. Oh, was that Friday the 13th?
They also did a similar premise with Warehouse 13.
Yeah. So. I knew that one, but man, I like the Friday the 13th, the TV series. That was kind of fun.
It was fun. Yeah, I forgot that was a thing until you mentioned it. Now I remember liking it.
One of the artifacts was the belt of Jacob Kurtzberg, which turned you into a superhero, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. Did you guys ever watch The Amazing Stories on Apple Plus?
No. How was that?
It was okay. Probably the best one is the one where the guy has a ring that gives him superpowers, turns him into a superhero. It's also the episode that the guy died before the show was released. Mm. So it was kind of like the posthumous kind of, he did a great job. We should have given him an award. He's really good. But it's just kind of there. I was kind of wanting something more.
Gotcha.
So, anyway, Scott, what do you got against manga?
Manga and I are not the best of friends. Okay. Two reasons. Every time I've tried to read one, and I understand this could be totally a me thing, so I want to put that out there first. I find the stories ridiculous and hard to take serious. Mm-hmm. Number one, even when they're translated well, you know, localization matters and all that. And I don't know Japanese, so I can't read any of this stuff in its raw form. The other thing is, it really, really does throw me reading right to left. Like, it's very frustrating to me.
I understand.
I wish those books were flipped the other way. And sometimes I know there's some that are published that way.
Have done that in the past, like Dark Horse, when they did their Akira adaptation, they flipped everything. And that caused some consternation with people. Because
people were upset about it. Yeah.
I think they flipped the kanji in the, in like some of the signs in the background. And so it didn't make any sense.
Yeah. That was weird. I think it's weird, but also I think it's more approachable for what people are used to. So I don't think there's any problem with, you know, like nobody's complaining that our American magazines are reading from left to right, but nobody complains that in Japan that when you read a magazine, you do it the opposite way. I think it's okay to keep those where they're at. That's where the culture's accepted direction. So I don't know. It's just hard for me, and it's constantly reminding me, oh, right, I'm reading this way, and I'll read panels out of order and stuff.
Yeah. So in relation to your first issue, I agree with you completely. That does still trip me up at times that I have to read it backwards. And there are times where I'll catch myself even in the middle of a book where I'm starting to read left to right. I'm like, oh, no, you got to read this the other way. But I find that if you, I don't want to say focus, but I find that if you get into the story that's being told, like Japanese Batman, what was that one called, Matthew? Batmanga?
That's what it was called when it was released. Yeah,
Batmanga. If you read through that, it's pretty quickly you figure out, oh, I'm just in this pattern, and you get into it, and then it's almost like second nature. And I've read a couple of really big volumes of manga stuff that I get into it, and then it's just like second nature kind of stuff. So maybe just more exposure to that will help you out. But I will say that
I think you're right. If I read more manga, this would not probably be an issue.
I would say don't go and read manga and then flip right to an American comic and then back to manga, because you will get messed up that way.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, what's your second issue with manga?
My second bigger issue is that the stories are goofy.
Oh, crazy over the top.
Yeah, I just don't. Okay, so this is the one we're talking about today, One Punch Man. I've seen the anime and loved it. I thought it was great. Like, huge fan. No complaints, issues, or anything. And I'm not even that big of an anime guy, but I really quite liked One Punch Man, and I'm excited to see that other new one. I forgot the name of it. My daughter wants me to watch it. That he made anyway.
Oh, that one made.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. The name of the thing though, it was also a manga, of course, and I can't remember. Anyway, it's just in the
could
front of my brain.
Anything?
Yeah, it could be anything really. But
yeah,
this I had a really hard time. I mean, I read it, but I was not. I did not enjoy it like I enjoy the anime.
Why? Why do you think? And because I had a real problem with this book, kind of the same way. Last week we did Demon Slayer, also manga, and I had some issues with this. This one, when I read through One Punch Man, this kind of sent me over the top with my problems with adaptations. Mm-hmm. I too, like you, Scott, saw One Punch Man before I read the comic because my kids, my boys, are just all into that stuff. They watch anime all the time. They watch anime that I'm like, are you sure you should be watching this? Cause this is pretty adult and grotesque. And my wife is just sitting there watching it with them. And it's just like, okay. So I had already seen One Punch Man.
Yeah.
And yes, the stories are over the top. And I think that honestly, I think the character's dumb. I think the adventures are stupid, silly. I'm not a fan of that kind of stuff. Until you get to his, I want to be a hero and why I want to be a hero story.
Go ahead. I thought Matthew was saying something. I was going to say that it's not that they're not endearing moments. It's not that there isn't some meat here, because obviously there is. It's a hugely popular property, and I love that it came from webcomics. There's another aspect to this. A lot of people don't know it was a webcomic before it became anything else. Hugely successful for one, which is clearly not his real name, but whatever. I, you know, for some reason, the goofiness doesn't work on page the way it does.
Yeah.
Animated. And I think it's because I'm getting big sweeping Japanese treatment of animation to these scenes that seem silly to me when they're static, but when they're moving, I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, this is a little bit like the reverse problem I have with, well, it's kind of the same problem. I can't read Simpson comics or Futurama comics or Rick and Morty comics for the same reason. I feel like I'm going from the wrong medium to the wrong medium. Mm-hmm. And I understand for a lot of people, this is the medium that starts with and then the anime. But for me, it's never the route I'm taking. So, I
can totally see where you're coming from in that, because that is a problem in any comic book where you are trying to show motion, fluid motion in a still form. Unless you've got the form and the pose down right, it looks weird. And in this case, I think it's compounded not only with you having to read right to left, but also, and I mentioned this last week, sometimes there are big panels where you're punching a monster, and we're reading this digitally thanks to Viz Media, where you've got like the page, three quarters of it, not a double page, but like it's a page and three quarters. That's a single panel, and it's split in two on the digital reader. And so you're missing out, here's One Punch Man swinging at the giant, 200 mile tall monster. And then you're like, what's he swinging at? He's obviously punching something. And then you go to the next page digitally. Now I realize if you're reading it physical form, you'd see this. And then you flip to the next page and you see that guy's eyeballs flying out of his head. So I think that's kind of an issue with this as well.
Conceptually, I just love the idea of a guy who's bored with his superhero because one punch is all it needs to do anything. And it's genius from its get go. I just don't know if I like it on the page. That's all.
Yeah. Matthew, what are your thoughts on this?
That's my biggest problem with it. I feel that a few years ago during the Civil War, there was a whole big moment where Spider-Man unmasked.
Oh, for a minute, I thought you meant like the American Civil War. It's like a few years ago.
Oh, yes. During the Civil War. Yeah. In the comics, even. I'm sorry. Marvel Comics Civil War.
Oh, there you go.
Spider-Man unmasked. And I remember an interview with Joe Quesada who said, yeah, this opens up a whole bunch of storytelling options that have never been told. And while that's true, it's a very limited alley of things that have never been told. And it took them about a year and a half before they went, oh, we've exhausted this and we're just going to undo this magical mystery. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And I feel like my biggest problem with One Punch Man is like that idea of, hey, Peter Parker is now unmasked. This is an inherently limiting concept. Because a lot of times in comics, you know, it, traditionally, especially in manga like this, the big giant fight sequence is kind of the meat of what you're getting. And, you know, a lot of these books, that big giant fight sequence, you know, be it drawn by, you know, Ishinomura or be it drawn by Frank Miller or somebody, you know, better than Frank Miller, you have those moments and those really feel like they are in some ways the best part of the story. Traditionally, when I read these kind of media, you know, that fight when you get to the end and it's like, no, I shall bring up the last ergs of my all for one power and I will smash you with the last section. And it will be this, you know, and with Saitama, it's superhuman strength is really boring. Well, and that is a hard concept to tie into a story about punching things really hard with superhumans.
And that's the question that I ask my kids. I, you know, unlike Scott's kids, who are more than happy to be part of everything that he does, my kids want nothing to do with my stuff. I have to drag the oldest down here to get him to record the copyright each year. But, you know, I ask these kids this whenever I watch One Punch Man. I was like, so he's got one punch. I mean, can he get beat up by other people? And they're like, no, not really, because, you know, he's kind of invulnerable. And I'm like, so where's the... you know, where's the threat? Where's the danger? Where's the, and they're like, that's not the point. The fighting isn't the point of this. It's just how silly and ridiculous all this stuff is in this world. And I was like, huh, okay, well, I guess I can get with it because I mean, here you've got, evacuate city Z or city Z has been destroyed, onward to city B. And it's like, they don't even, you know, they're just, you know, even having fun with kind of this weird future city naming thing that goes on in this show. So I don't think, I think it's just the it's supposed to be funny just because here's a guy with one punch and he's bored because he can punch everybody and he has no aspirations. He has no aspirations. And I think that's where the joke is. But then again, I'm a Gen Xer, so who knows?
It's a deconstruction to some level, but it's also the danger with any type of deconstruction is have you taken out a load bearing wall? And I feel like having the main character's super strength be something that bores him really hedges almost too close to one of the biggest complaints in American comics. Superman's too powerful. That makes him boring because Superman's too powerful. And I feel like, sorry, I'm actually quoting a specific person there, but I feel like taking this and making it the center of the story is a really, really difficult balancing act. And while on the one hand, I really appreciate that they seem to do it throughout this whole volume, I feel like they really do pull off that expectation. It does feel a lot more parody.
I don't think it's supposed to be taken seriously.
You can't take anything seriously anymore. You know, it's the year 2020.
Well, I mean, here you have this guy that's an android, obviously feels like a riff on a Robot Boy, right? Or Astro Boy. Yeah, feels like a riff on Astro Boy. And, you know, he's just begging to be the, you know, the trainee for One Punch Man. And it just feels like, oh, they're just lifting all these tropes that we know about superheroes, whether it be from, you know, Japanese manga or whether it be from U.S. comics or European comics or wherever it may be. And just saying, none of this matters. Let's just make this dumb just to be silly dumb. And I can understand that. I mean, Bazooka Joe comics are the dumbest thing in the world, but you enjoy reading Bazooka Joe comics because you know in about 5 seconds that gum's going to tear up the inside of your mouth. So you have this one little joyous thing. And I don't know. I'm going to give One Punch Man a pass on all of those complaint issues because I think it's just supposed to be dumb fun.
Yeah, it is. And that's, I think, why I don't like comics that are dumb fun, but I sure like animation that is. And I would give, like, if I was to compare the two and we're still throwing meatloaf around, I'd give a whole bunch of meatloaf to the anime and like leftovers to the comic. It just
and here's my big complaint, my biggest complaint about all of this. So I said at the beginning of the show when we were talking about Lock and Key, how I wanted a more closer to the source material adaptation of Lock and Key in that live action form. I'm fine with slight changes here and there. If they would have kept it hard R and just kept everything that they had in there, this would have, that would have been a great show. When you look at the anime, knowing that it went webcomic, you know, Shonen Jump or wherever it appeared next, and then into an anime, I hate the direct adaptation because I haven't seen all of One Punch Man. I've probably seen like four or five episodes, bits, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it angered me when I sat down to read One Punch Man and say, I've seen all this before. And not only that, they do a lot of the same stuff that is shot for shot, frame for frame in the anime from the comic book. And it's the same lines, the everything. And I'm just like, it irritates the crap out of me. That was my complaint last week with Demon Slayer, was that we read the first volume and I was like, okay, let me see how close this is to the anime. And it was like a shot for shot remake of the comic, of the manga. And it just irritated the crap out of me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's, I know that there's
shot for shot that I don't, is that a tradition with anime and manga adaptation?
No, I don't think so. Because again, you go and look at Akira, that is not, you look at the movie and then you look at the, at the comic. Those are two totally different things. You go and you watch, Battle Royale and you read the manga Battle Royale, which I wouldn't suggest you do that, Scott. It'll give you nightmares. But those two things are totally opposite from one another. They still got the same themes, the same ideas, but the comic goes in one direction and the other, and the anime goes in the another. Same way with Full Metal Alchemist. Now there's a reason behind that. Same way with Cowboy Bebop. You know, the comics and the anime are totally different, and I'm totally okay with that. But when I get down to, we're just going to do a remake of what you read in the comic, it just kind of bores me because it's just like, why?
Yeah.
To add color.
and apparently motion, because and apparently in motion, because that's what Scott wants, is more motion in this. So I understand. Listen, I understand the reason why you want to make an adaptation of something, whether it be Harry Potter or whether it be I don't know, what's another adaptation, whether it be the new upcoming Percy, what's his name, and the Lightning of the Olympus people.
New upcoming from 2005.
No, I'm with you. They're making a TV series off the Percy Jackson stuff, starring that kid from the time travel Ryan Reynolds movie not too long ago, which I praised him up and down. So he's going to be the new Percy Jackson. So
I think a series treatment actually is that those books are beloved by the fans.
And so I understand wanting to see your favorite stuff adapted into the screen. And yes, I understand when everybody went and saw the Fellowship of the Rings, how it's like, it's pretty close to the book, but not quite there. So true hardcore fans are probably a little disappointed. But then again, there were more people in the theater who had never read Tolkien than actually read Tolkien and knew what the changes and the differences were. So I understand the idea to adapt something so that it appeals to the mass audience. I don't have a problem with that. Otherwise, why would I enjoy going to see superhero movies? But the problem that I have is, if it is a shot for shot remake of everything that's in a book, wow, that's really boring. Because now if you say, oh, you know, someone's like, oh, you like the One Punch Man? Oh yeah, it's based on a manga. Should I read it? I can't say go read it because you've already seen it on the screen. Whereas somebody goes and says, did you like Fellowship of the Rings? Yeah, there are some changes from the book. Oh, there's a book based on this? Yes, you should really read it. It really explores things a lot more. That adds a whole other layer of information to the material. Like if you ever go and read the novelization of the Back to the Future movie, which I used to do that a lot in the '80s because that was the only way that I could rewatch a movie. There are very significant additions in the book that are not in the movie. Like how did Marty get out of detention to make it to the Battle of the Bands tryout where Huey Lewis shot him down? It's all in there in the book. It goes into other thoughts and reflections that maybe you can parse from the movie, but it's not there. But it, by reading it in the book, adds something to it. If you've watched the anime and you're going to go read One Punch Man, the book adds nothing new to the One Punch Man experience.
100%
agree with that. And that's where I get so frustrated with a direct adaptation.
Yeah, I would have been better. I think you're onto something. I think if the book had taken us to deeper, maybe, then great. Otherwise, it was just a retelling. As best as I remember, it has been a while, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm dealing with all the distractions of, wait, what page am I on? Oh, shoot. I'm looking for, like, there's that whole thing. So to me, it just kind of compounded the problem. And made me wish that I, you know, understood why manga is so popular.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, hopefully this doesn't deter you from reading more manga in the future, Scott.
Yeah, we'll see. And I'll keep calling it manga accidentally.
That's fine. I'm sure everybody will. Matthew, what are your thoughts on my whole, I want an adaptation, but I don't want a direct adaptation kind of thing.
I feel like it's problematic on one level in that, honestly, if you're going to do an adaptation, I feel like you want to try and hew as close as possible, because as we said with the Lock and Key stuff, the changes that they made were kind of counter to the original material. But I also do understand why you say, you know, I don't necessarily want to see this and then read it and then see it again. But I feel like some of our favorite moments in, you know, the movies of the last few years have been directly lifted from the comics.
I mean, so, yeah. I mean, look at Watchmen.
I feel like...
Look at Watchmen. Yeah. People either love the movie
good
or
comic,
hate the
terrible
movie.
Movie.
Yeah. But the thing is, they tried to skew as close to the book as they could, and they even used some stuff that was directly lifted from the comic book in the shooting of the movie.
They visually tried to stay close. Yeah. They changed everything else.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's...
And dumbed it all down and really ruined a lot of characters. But yeah, I'm with you there.
No, but that's what I'm saying, is it's enough difference to where you could turn to Scott after he watched that movie and was like, that's a good movie. And I could say, Scott, really, go and read the comic book.
Are we talking about Watchmen? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Laurie's an actual character in the comic.
I read Watchmen at least once a year. It's one of my favorite comics of all time. I was okay with the movie. It was just kind of...
No,
I wasn't mad. I wasn't put off on it, but I was glad the book existed, so I had that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And if you didn't have the movie, you wouldn't have gotten the HBO series that I think is the superior over the movie. And then I think it is a great
thing you're asking for, because it gave you so much extra, so much more. You know that comic front to back. You don't need a retelling of that. So they gave us something totally different. Yeah. I loved it.
But then you look at something like the adaptation of what is it? The Silver Age from DC Comics. What's that one from? What's his face? Darwin Cook.
Darwin Cook.
Is it called Silver Age? I keep forgetting what the title of it is. New Frontier.
There you go.
So the New Frontier, the animated movie, does a really good job of adapting the comic book series without including everything in the comic book series and still giving you the meat of the story. You get greater satisfaction if you watch the animated movie and then go and read the comic. Yes, you're going to say, oh, I know what this beat is. I know what Monster Island is. Oh, I know what's going on here. But then you get to say, oh, look at all this other stuff that's in the comic that didn't make it to the movie. Therefore, it adds to it. Unfortunately, One Punch Man, Demon Slayer don't do that.
Yeah.
And so for me, bottom line is, listen, if you've never seen the One Punch Man anime, go and watch the One Punch Man anime.
Recommend it.
Yeah. It's good. The manga... It's fine. It's okay. There's nothing really in there. I mean, I don't know how long it took you, Scott, but this is like 170 some pages. It took me less than a half hour to read this.
Super short. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not.
But if you've seen the anime, there's no reason to read the manga. That's going to be my bottom line. So overall, I'm going to say my bottom line for this is it's fine, but I'm going to give it a pass. I have zero desire to read any more One Punch Man. So, Matthew, what are your final thoughts on One Punch Man Volume 1?
I'm kind of the same way for a different reason. I feel like if you have a story and that the main hook of that story kind of undermines one of the, you know, the supporting pylons of a comic book story, it's going to be really tough to sell. And even though I feel like they do well, you know, this story does work on it, I also feel like comparatively, I liked the anime, much like Scott, but I also kind of felt there that having this whole thing of, you know, one punch will end the fight kind of undermines a lot of the things that are enjoyable. Whereas if you've ever played the video game, I love the video game because you play Moomin Rider trying to last long enough for Saitama to show up and make his one punch. Mm. So the One Punch Man video game isn't actually about him at all.
That's the
kind of thing that I really enjoy. So okay.
If you want to have more fun with One Punch Man beyond the video game, go and watch this guy who created fan films on One Punch Man on YouTube, these live action One Punch Man videos. they're fantastic.
Yeah.
So go and do that. So
I may have to do that.
Yeah. Scott, bottom line on One Punch Man from you.
Give it a,
so we do, you go out, buy it, rush right out
in a buying frenzy. Yes.
Borrow it from the library or skip it.
If you're a giant fan of One Punch Man, you've seen the anime and you're like, man, I love this. And you need everything you can ever get about it. Go to the library. You don't need to run out and buy it. Just read it so you can then say you read it. Like, I'm glad I read it, because now I can say, oh, okay, I get it. I see where the source is. And I have some additional appreciation for some of the art and stuff like that. But I would not rush out and buy this. So yeah, library.
Okay.
Borrow from a friend, something like that.
I am pasting the One Punch Man stuff in the chat for you guys to go and check out. The live action stuff, it's really good. You can just go, just do a One Punch Man live action on YouTube. You guys will find it. So there you go. Scott, thank you so much for hanging out with us again this month. Where can people find more of your stuff, and what else are you doing that people are going to be interested in?
Well, it's, of course, all over there at frogpants.com/podcasts. You'll find it real easy if you just go to frogpants.com, and there's a ton of shows. So if you're into video games, two or three of those are going to be the right show for you, including a retro show that we're doing right now. I just finished recording today, which is so much fun to go back to the games of our childhood and beyond, and bring them to a new audience. So go check all of that stuff out, frogpants.com. If you are looking for my artwork or any of the comics I do, also frogpants.com. And if you're trying to poke me in on social media, why, it'd be Twitter I would try. Scott Johnson over there.
Yeah, and Scott's going to be back in May. We're going to be looking at Monstrous from Image Comics. I think that also has some Asian influence on that. Cannot wait for that. In the meantime, that's where we're going to wrap up this installment of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you for listening. Currently, our show is entirely funded by you, our patrons. So thank you so much to those of you who back our show.
Nice. If you want to help support us, if you want to join that group of supporters, you can go to patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can sign up for a silver level membership today, or you can also help support a little bit here and there by using the affiliate links that you find at majorspoilers.com.
We are going to be back next week because, Rand is back. Ukla the Mach is back. We're going to be talking about the Avengers, the Korvac saga. Why? Because we know that you love comics, and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
I've had the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.